This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, as we continue to get you set for the college football season. 93 days away from the start of college football in our lives. Week zero will be a pretty good one. Let's be honest. We are going to be craving those week zero games. We're getting game times this week of when those games will be played, even though we already have some of them. And then week one will be here before we know it, Labor Day weekend. I saw our buddy Will Hill, my ginger brother, tweet out, "What's a better sports weekend, Memorial Day or Labor Day?" And I said, "Come on, what are we doing here? College football gets going. It's always Labor Day," even though Memorial Day certainly is a weekend that has a little bit under the radar, if you will, with hockey playoffs, NBA, for me, being a weirdo, the lacrosse, national championships going on, baseball nonstop. But Labor Day weekend is going to be a good weekend. But is it going to be a great weekend? We'll dive into it just a little bit. Hate to be the guy raining on the opening weekend parade, but could we have done better, college football? Could we have done better in week one? But what do we have in store today on the podcast? Wes Reynolds, it is Wednesday when we're recording. You might be listening to this later, but in unison with what we do during the regular season, Wednesdays with Wes, we've done an in-depth dive on Ohio State, who is one of the betting favorites to win the title, with Bobby Carpenter. We did an in-depth dive on Notre Dame. I know, shocker, right? But we got to do an in-depth dive on the defending national champion, Indiana Hoosiers. And it was funny, I remember on this podcast a year ago saying, who's going to be this year's Indiana? Who's going to be the surprise team that makes the playoff? Well, now, who's going to be this year's Indiana? Who's going to be that team who was 100-1 to win the national championship? So you could do back-to-back years of who's going to be this year's Indiana. And just to put it out there, who are the teams around 100-1 to win the national title? Utah, SMU. Those are both teams sitting at 100-1 to win the national title. And before you say it's crazy, Indiana did do it a year ago. But we will dive into that. What do we expect from the Hoosiers? No longer will you be able to get Indiana on sale for anything. 2 years ago, win total 5.5. They win 11 games. They go to the playoff. They were around 100-1 preseason to make the playoff. Last year, win total bumps to 8.5. They go undefeated. They win the Big Ten. They win the national title. They have the Heisman Trophy winner. So no longer are you going to be able to get the Indiana quarterback at 66-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. Josh Hoover is 12-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. No longer are you going to get the Hoosiers at 100-1 to win the title, despite losing Fernando Mendoza and Omar Cooper and Keelan Black and D'Angelo Pons and Elijah Surratt and Aiden Fisher. They're still going to be amongst the favorites to win the national championship. So the Cignetti tax is here, but I'm not going to be fading him. No thanks. 25-0 straight up as a favorite, 17-8 ATS in those spots. But situationally, yeah, maybe a couple of tricky spots going on the road in Nebraska prior to playing Ohio State, playing Michigan on the road after playing Ohio State, taking on Washington after they play USC in the second to last game of the regular season. But once again, Indiana answered every question and then some a year ago, even though for those who had Indiana futures and then bet on Miami in the national championship, like our guy Matt Eumanns, you were able to thread that needle. So Wes will join us a little bit later on in the podcast. Also on the podcast, David Hale, who has a great article out, one of my favorite articles every offseason, ranking all 138 quarterback situations in college football. And we've already recorded that interview. Really good stuff. And had to ask him about my guy, Devin Dampier of Utah. But Really, really interesting stuff with David Hale, who was joining us live from, I believe, SEC, not Media Days, but whatever they've got going on right now down in Destin, Florida. So really like that conversation. And I highly recommend you check out that article. It will get you ready for the year. And it will also lead to you learning things like what I learned, that Malachi Nelson is still playing college football. Do you know where Malachi Nelson, the former five-star recruit who went to USC, do you know where he is at in 2026? I'll give you 3 seconds. One, two, three. Syracuse. Yes, he is the backup quarterback to Steve Angeli. Maybe third string. I don't know. He went from USC to Boise State to UTEP, and Malachi Nelson is at Syracuse now. So sometimes reading articles like David Hale's article, you learn some things. And I learned that Malachi Nelson is still playing college football and he is at Syracuse. So looking forward to that conversation as well. Once again, continue to email us, cfbpod@vsin.com. We've had some great emails come in. We also had a couple of guest suggestions, and we will have one of those guests on the podcast next week. Mike Calabrese from the Action Network. So do give us an email. If you have some suggestions, I'll do my best to get those gentlemen or ladies on the podcast. So cfbpod@vsin.com. Also, continue to rate, review, and subscribe to iTunes, Spotify, YouTube as well. Let's grow those YouTube numbers. Over 1,000 subscribers right now. Let's continue to build those YouTube numbers as we head into the year. All right. One thing I wanted to mention here, as you know me, I'm fired up always for college football. It's what we do here on this podcast. It's my favorite sport. Love talking about it, as you all know. Can we be honest for a second? Week zero, I actually think, is pretty good. Week zero, we've got UNC TCU over in Dublin. Weird location, but still decent game. We've got our beloved Hawaii Bows playing their week zero game at Stanford. Stanford, interesting team this year. Stanford, a 3-point favorite on the farm. I actually think a really good G5 game in Las Vegas. Memphis taking on UNLV and NC State, Virginia down in Rio. So we actually have a pretty tasty week zero, all things considered, because you got to remember, week zero, not usually known for having a primo event. You also get USC in action against San Jose State. You get Florida State in action as well. So I think week zero this year, August 29th, pretty good. Week one, we could do better. You know, last year, the build up to week one was Texas and Ohio State. And I know that game wasn't the most spectacular game, but still, it was Texas in Ohio State. We get that game this year, but it's in week two. That's all right. Week two. Week one. If you look at ESPN's way too early top 25, the top 10 teams are all 20-point favorites or higher, with one exception. And that would be Ole Miss against Louisville, which is a game that'll be played in Nashville, but on Sunday. So when you look at the Saturday slate, you're like, where am I getting this, meat on the bone, if you will? Ohio State plays Ball State, 49.5-point favorite. Oregon, Boise State, maybe we get something similar to what we got a couple years ago when Ashton Gentry and Boise State went to Oregon and were right there with the Ducks. Probably should have won the game, to be honest. Not expecting the same level of Boise State team. They don't have a generational talent at running back. They do have a returning quarterback in Maddox Mattson. Oregon, 24.5-point favorite. Georgia is playing FCS Tennessee State, so there's no line on that game. I would imagine, 55-60-point spread in that game. Then you have Notre Dame, Wisconsin. That'll be a Sunday night game at Lambeau. We were hoping when this game was announced. I mean, in 2021, remember, when these two teams played at Soldier Field, Notre Dame was an underdog at Soldier Field. They won the game. Score was a little bit more lopsided than really the box score would say. There was a kickoff return and I think a couple of pick sixes in that game as well. I think there's some intrigue with Wisconsin. Colton Joseph, the transfer, comes in from Old Dominion. Obviously, you're playing the game at Lambeau, so there's a unique aspect to that. But still, 20.5-point spread right now, even though there are some people, I think Mike Calabrese, who will be joining us next week on the podcast from Action Network, he is one that believes that Wisconsin is going to be capable in that game as an underdog. Texas plays Texas State, 30.5-point spread. Indiana plays North Texas, 40.5-point spread. Miami at Stanford. Is this going to be a weird late-night game on the farm? Miami, 21.5-point favorite. Texas Tech, no line against FCS Abilene Christian. And then Texas A&M, 38.5-point favorite against Missouri State. To me, the most intriguing game of week one, I think, is Ole Miss-Louisville, which will be a Sunday night game on ABC in Nashville. And we're going to talk about Lincoln Kienholz a little bit more with David Hale, the Louisville quarterback, the transfer from Ohio State. Jeff Brohm is an underdog, always a guy that you want to look to back, an unknown at the quarterback position. Could there be a high upside? But then I think the number one quarterback coming into the year is Trinidad Chambliss. I did some rankings with my buddy Jeffrey Wright down on 92.9 ESPN in Memphis, and we were making fun of ourselves because a year ago, I believe my number one quarterback coming into the year was Cade Klubnik. That did not work out very well for me, or Clemson, for that matter. But I think, all things considered, yes, new coaching staff, obviously, but I think Trinidad Chambliss is the top quarterback coming into this year. I'm not talking pro prospects. I'm just talking production-wise, exciting quarterback. To me, Trinidad Chambliss is the number one quarterback. I put together a quick list with my buddy Jeffrey Wright down on 92.9 ESPN, and this was the list that I ultimately came up with. It was Chambliss 1, Manning 2, CJ Carr, Homer, number 3, Mensa 4, Dante Moore 5, Julian Sayin 6, Sam Levitt 7, Devin Dampier, can't quit him, my guy from Utah, 8. Had to put Josh Hoover on there because I didn't have Fernando Mendoza in my top 10 last year preseason. And then Damon Williams at 10. Subject to change, but that was my quick thought of it. Back to week one, the closest games from a point spread standpoint are these ones. UNLV at Hawaii. Yes, I'm not just saying that because you know my connection and affinity for our guy Timmy Chang there on the island, and Mike Kawazoe, our buddy at over at Rainbow Athletics. But that is the shortest spread of week one. UNLV at Hawaii. UNLV, by the way, a 1.5-point favorite at Hawaii. Just a reminder, I'll probably say it 50 times before the game kicks off. Timmy Chang, 21-6-1 ATS on home turf since taking over as the head coach of the Bows back in 2021. Another game, UCLA at Cal. I think that'll be a pretty good one week one. The Bob Chesney era beginning out at UCLA. Cal bringing back Jaron Chiave Sangapulateli, JKS, Nick Rolovich back as his quarterback coach. We've got a first-time head coach there at Cal as well. A Monday night game. What is Florida State going to be? SMU, a short road favorite at Florida State. And then, you go down the list. San Jose State at Eastern Michigan, 3.5. Wyoming at Colorado State, catching 4. Wyoming is. Western Kentucky at Nevada. Liberty at James Madison. Baylor versus Auburn. That game is in Atlanta, thanks to a tweeter who let me know. So week one. Yeah, we're kind of searching, right, for it. Now, it is worth noting the game day team is going to Clemson at LSU. And, Death Valley under the lights should be a really good atmosphere. Lane Kiffin's debut. I don't know what the heck to expect from Clemson this year. We talked about their win total sitting at 7.5, lowest in Lord knows how long for the Clemson Tigers. Do we see something better from Clemson in that week one game? We think back to last year and the buildup for that game, both those teams underachieving last season. LSU won that game. Garrett Nussmeier, hey, this guy's going to be the Heisman Trophy winner. And then it all kind of went sideways after that. But we could do better week one. Week zero, I like you. You're looking pretty good. It's kind of like that that movie that it doesn't get all the acclaim, but you watch it a lot, cult classic, like an Office Space. Week zero, looking good. Week one, I don't know. We could do better. So hopefully some of these games live up to the billing, but we will see. All right. That said, let's take a quick break. When we come back, David Hale of ESPN, he's got a column out as he looks at all 138 quarterback situations. We'll talk about his favorite quarterbacks coming into the year, the likes of CJ Carr, Trinidad Chambliss, Arch Manning, and Darian Mensah. But he also will give us some off-the-radar guys as well. David Hale coming up on the other side. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. And as promised from ESPN, David Hale joins us right now. Just labor of love article is out for David, and we had him on last year. It's a great read, ranking all 138 FBS quarterback situations. David, give us a little peek behind the counter. How long does this process take to properly rank, in your eyes, the 138 quarterback situations in the country?
Labor of love is probably not the right term. It's a labor of something. Masochism, perhaps. I don't know. It's a long process. I mean, like, here's the thing. Like, ranking, like, researching, whatever. Like, at first, you've got... The first step is, like, to realize, who is Kennesaw State's quarterback again? Like, I don't know. Nobody knows. There's no... It's all happening in a vacuum. So, you know, it's a lot of just first, like, who the hell are these guys? And then... I mean, I spend weeks, kind of an hour a day, 2 hours a day, just digging through stats and trying to find stuff that's, interesting. I want to learn more about the QBs so I can properly rank them, but also, like, defend what the rankings are and offer some, hopefully, some interesting nuggets along the way on guys. You know, a lot of these guys, I hardly will tell you this is a definitive ranking. It is a ranking based on kind of where I see things today. Every year, I end up embarrassing myself by the end of the year. But the good news is that anybody who's read this, most of them have already decided I'm an idiot. So it's not, you know, they don't have to wait till the end of the season to learn that.
Well, I'll say this. In your defense, we all were idiots last year because none of us had Fernando Mendoza as the runaway Heisman winner. So we're heading into this year knowing that we already will become idiots and look like dummies. I actually did a ranking the other day, David, and I said, I don't care what Josh Hoover's going to be. He's going to be in my top 10 just because of last year. But looking at, these tiers that you put together, and I've said it the past month, the quality of quarterbacks heading into this year, who knows if it plays out, but David, it feels like, and I've said it a bunch, it's the year of the quarterback, because you go up and down and you go to, you know, tier five for you, and you've got names like Avery Johnson, you've got really notable names. So how deep do you feel like the quarterbacks are this year in college football?
It is, I mean, having done this for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years now, this does to me feel like maybe the best group. And it's a group where you've got, like, you know, I mean, you mentioned Josh Hoover, guys like Gunnar Stockton, the veterans who've been around and started playoff games or started for multiple seasons. And it's like, oh, those are really good quarterbacks. But then you look at, like, the breadth of guys who, you know, really last year came into their own and have an opportunity to be something special. I mean, CJ Carr, I thought, you know, after halftime of the first game, CJ Carr looked like a really good college football quarterback. Julian Sain, I mean, you can knock him if you want because he's had such great receivers, but he has made the most of those receivers. There's just so many guys, I think, that, not only have already proven that they're good, but I think there's a lot of meat left on the bone, so to speak. They're guys who I think have an opportunity to be even better this year than they were last year.
So let's get to tier one. Your tier one, which you determine as room at the top, and you've got four players. So you've got CJ Carr of Notre Dame, Trinidad Chambliss of Ole Miss, Arch Manning of Texas, and Darian Mensah, the transfer from Duke at Miami. Why did you cut it off at those four? And we'll get to Julian Sain here, who's kind of 1B, but why did you cut off at those four? Why were those four, in your eyes, the top heading into the year?
Yeah, I think part of it is I saw so much from them last year that I said, like, okay, that's they're in an elite tier, and probably a few others that are in there. Then you say, like, all right, well, is there an opportunity for them to grow from where they were last year? And as I mentioned with guys like CJ Carr, I think so. I mean, even somebody like Trinidad Chambliss, who just, you know, last year was not his first year as a starter, but it was his first year as a Power Four starter, an FBS starter. So I think there's room for him to grow and improve. you know, and then you look at fit and where are they at? And I mean, what Miami did with first Cam Ward and then Carson Beck, and you say, Darian Mentz is probably probably an upgrade from Carson Beck just in terms of what he can be. And I like just knowing Darian a little bit, like I think that's a really good fit for him there. So it's sort of this combination of like, who do you have around you? What's your talent set? How much can you grow from here? And sort of what's the fit in the system and the team that you're on? All of those, for those guys, I think all of those pieces sort of fit together. And then, yeah, I put Julian Say in sort of a tier B, but his numbers were elite. But he also has a separate, weapon called Jeremiah Smith, who adds a whole other level of elite.
Well, Darian Mensah now gets Malachi Toney. So we saw him with Cooper Barkate. Now he gets Malachi Toney.
Well, he's still got Cooper Barkate, too. He drug him with him. Like, that was like the throw-in deal. Everybody's like, oh, boy, Miami really fleeced Duke. And it's like, you didn't even mention the guy that you took their best receiver, too.
Yeah, I mean, the rapport, if Mensah could just avoid the silly mistakes, and look, they all have some sort of knock against them, as you pointed out in the column. So let's hit on some of those question marks. And let's go to C.J. Carr. C.J. Carr, you know, against USC, he didn't really have to do anything because they played too high safety and Jeremiah Love ran for about 5 million yards. But he did struggle a bit against some of the better competition. Now, maybe you could throw out Miami because that was his first start. When you dove into the numbers on a guy like Carr, what were some of the concerns that maybe you had?
Yeah, I mean, that was basically it. Like, and look, to say a guy wasn't as good against good teams as he was against bad teams, like, that's not breaking any news here. But the numbers were pretty stark for C.J. Carr. Like, a lot of his... And it's, again, this isn't his fault. Notre Dame's schedule was pretty weak for most of last season. Mm-hmm. And so when you set aside like the really high-end games, like, he didn't look as special there. But, a couple of things that I sort of push back on that at the same time is, like, as you said, look, A&M and Miami were his first two career starts. Like, yeah, you'd expect him to have a little bit of a learning curve there. Notre Dame's passing attack was mostly C.J. Carr. Like, his receivers were not elite level guys. I think they've got a better receiving core at Notre Dame this year than they had last year. I do question, like, what's it going to look like without those two great running backs led by Jeremiah Love that really were the bread and butter? I mean, and this is sort of like a little bit of like the Julian Thane conversation of, like, you have this other weapon that is so good that it makes your life easier. And if you don't have that weapon with you anymore, are you ready to sort of be like C.J. Carr didn't have to be the guy. And this year, he is absolutely the guy. And this is, you know, there's a lot of things I would push and say, like, Notre Dame should have played in the bowl game last year, despite being snubbed for the playoff. If I was Notre Dame, I would have just wanted to play that game to see what C.J. Carr looks like without those guys, because obviously I think those guys would have opted out as a running back. Hey, give him a taste of what life's going to be like in 2026, a year early in a game that won't mean anything.
So let's get to Arch Manning. He was the Heisman favorite heading into last year. I think the expectations were way too high. And I think people, I don't want to say generalized, but there's a lot of people who are already, he's overrated, but he's not. And he was exceptional down the stretch. And, oh, by the way, they added maybe a 1B to Jeremiah Smith's 1A in Cam Coleman. So they've got insane talent around him. They've got a great play caller in Sark. As the year went on, what popped about Arch Manning's numbers that maybe flew a little bit under the radar because they weren't a playoff team?
Yeah, I mean, I think so many people sort of just gave up on him by the end of September and weren't really paying attention to how much better he was down the second half of the season. And the numbers are striking. I mean, he was everything that people thought he was going to be. He was that, just not for the first month of the season. So I think you start with that. As you said, he's got more talent, I think, surrounding him. You know, one of the things I was surprised by as I sort of dug into the numbers is, like, he was not utilized as much of a runner as his skill set would suggest. Like, he is a really good athlete, and they can run more with him. I think that what you saw was, like, they probably handled him with a little more kid gloves than they maybe needed to at times last year. And as he became more comfortable, you saw them open up more options. I think you're going to see, like, an even next level of what Arch Manning can do this year, because there's more tools in that toolbox than I think he really showcased last year.
So we did. I did an exercise on a radio show with my buddy down in Memphis, and we ranked our top 10 quarterbacks fresh off of your article. And we both came to the conclusion heading into this year, the top quarterback in college football is Trinidad Chambliss. Just everything that he does, the unique skill set, him playing to that level in the playoff. Now he's got a full offseason. Granted, new head coach, new offensive coordinator, some weapons move out. They still have Kawan Lacy. The numbers that you dug into from Trinidad Chambliss, is he the quarterback that excites you the most heading into this year?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing too, like, because he is this beautiful mix of like, he has so much room to improve because of what last year was. I mean, people forget he was not the starter to start the season at Ole Miss last year. He beat, Austin Simmons gets hurt and Trinidad Chambliss didn't let go of the job. It's funny. This is a little bit of a tangent, but Bill O'Brien, I talked to Bill O'Brien about his quarterback and he's like, yeah, you know, he's same league as Trinidad Chambliss came from. And Trinidad Chambliss was the offensive player of the year in 24. And then this guy was Mason McKenzie was in 25. And I was like, well, are we stretching this analogy a little bit? And I went back and like looked up their numbers and yeah, we're stretching that analogy a little bit. Trinidad Chambliss ran for 25 touchdowns at Ferris State in their way to a D2 national championship. Like the dude is just does everything spectacularly. And then when you sit down and talk to him, I mean, he is one of the most insightful, sharpest, smartest, gets it guys that you're going to talk to too. So he's like this combination of both like maturity, system, experience, but like room to grow too. Like there's just so, and again, does it all really well.
Yeah. I mean, look, week one is lackluster and I think that's giving a little love. But that game, Louisville, Ole Miss, it's the only game where a top 10 team is not a 3-touchdown favorite. Yes. And it's a touchdown spread. So I can't wait to see that game, even though I'll be at Lambeau Field. So I'll be watching it on my phone.
The interesting thing about that game is I like the quarterback on the other side of that matchup, too. Lincoln Keynotes is a really fascinating one because, he's a guy who pushed Julian Sands throughout camp last year at Ohio State. And I think Jeff Brohm is probably in the top, probably 3 or 4 offensive minds in the country. And then you add to that, like he's never really had a mobile quarterback the way that Lincoln Keenholtz's athleticism could allow him to be. I think that to me is a very, I don't know what it's going to look like, but Jeff Brohm having a new toy to play with to me seems awfully fun as well.
Yeah, I was going to go in order, but you've gotten me there. Let's get to tier 11. The waiting is the hardest part because we did a podcast last week and we did a Heisman draft. Yeah, very creative by me. And later on, it was the long shots. I picked Lincoln Keenholtz because I'm a big Jeff Brohm guy. And look, whether it was Bobby Carpenter blowing smoke up the whole situation, but he said last year it was a legit race for that QB1 job and Saiyan was just a little bit more polished. I mean, this is a true elite athlete. I know he's from the Dakotas, but in the tier 11, you've got Aaron Filo from Florida, transferred from Georgia Tech. Alberto Mendoza, yes, the little bro of Fernando. He goes to Georgia Tech. Kenny Minchie transfers from Notre Dame to Kentucky. Austin Simmons, who you mentioned, he goes to Missouri. And then North Dakota State goes with Nathan Hayes. So of those 6 quarterbacks, as you dug into it and talked around, David, who are the guys that we should be, excited about? Because it feels like those are the perfect, gambling quarterbacks that we would be like, hey, this guy's off the radar. No one's talking about him, but these guys have got some talent.
Yeah, well, I like Simmons at Missouri. I think that's a really good fit. And they made the most of Bo Prabula last year. And I think he's sort of limited as in his skill set. Simmons is an upgrade skill set-wise there. That could be a really good fit. Kenny Minchie's the guy that jumps out to me, though, because you pair him, another guy who, like, as good as CJ Carr was, Kenny Minchie pushed him throughout camp last year, too. And I think there was a point last August where people thought Minchie was going to potentially win that job. So he's a smart kid with a lot of talent. And then you pair him with Will Stein, the new coach there at Kentucky, who has had a lot of success at Oregon working with quarterbacks there. I like that a lot. Now, look, is Kentucky like flush with talent around him? Maybe a little bit not so much, but I think there's tons of upside for Minchie. That to me is good quarterback in a good system and a good head coach. And the training wheels will be off because Kentucky's kind of got nothing to lose this year. Go throw a lot out there and see what we can do.
The welcome to the big leagues, this has been a big discussion over the years, players transferring up from the group of five to the P4, excelling. We've certainly seen some players. So you've got three quarterbacks in there. One, I wouldn't call him a household name, but certainly for listeners of this podcast, they know Drew Mestemaker. So he goes to Oklahoma State with a lot of other talent. And then you've got Anthony Calandria, who, you know, was kind of a, he was all over the place at UVA, but I thought he kind of came into his own at UNLV. He's now at Nebraska, and Byron Brown follows his coach to Auburn. So of those three, which one jumps out to you the most in your welcome to the big leagues?
Calandria is one of those guys that I, as I did the research on this, came away the most like surprised at just how good his numbers were. Like, he was really good. And I followed him a good bit at Virginia, and I know the coaching staff there did not want to lose him. They liked him a lot. His problem was, for every great play that he'd make a really dumb one too. I always called him sort of the poor man's Johnny Manziel. He just, you know, he was a playmaker and swashbuckling kind of guy, but that could lead to trouble as well. I think he has refined off, his year at UNLV helped him sort of shave off some of those rough edges. And look, the transition to the Big Ten is going to be more difficult. Like, this is, you got to prove it at a much higher level here. He's going to play better defenses than he did when he was at Virginia, frankly. But you look at his total QBR, which takes into account quality of opposition. So, like, it's hard for a group of five guy to have a super high total QBR. It's better than any Nebraska quarterback since like 2006. That's an insane thing to say. So, I mean, even if he's 85% or 80% of what he was last year, it's still probably the best quarterback situation that Nebraska's had in quite some time.
So tier four, I think, is an interesting one because there's a lot of names that you know. There might be some names that you thought were gone that are still there, and that would be a Noah Fafita at Arizona or a Kevin Jennings at SMU, heck, even a Connor Wegman at Houston. But the tier, you named it better than you thought. So did you go into this exercise, and did those five quarterbacks, Fafita, Arizona, Wegman, Houston, Bailey, NC State, Jennings, SMU, and a guy that I love, Damon Williams at Washington, did their numbers surprise you, David?
I mean, like, it's one of those things, like, I knew they were pretty good. I thought, you know, I was like, Wegman's a great example of a guy. Like, I feel like we all wrote him off after the Texas A&M stuff.
Yeah.
And then they won 10 games last year, but everybody nobody cared. Like, nobody paid attention to the fact that they were good. And I was like, well, wait a minute. Let me look into this. And he was really, I mean, he basically put up Arch Manning numbers. Now, not against this type of schedule, but, you know, the overall numbers were similar. Willie Fritz is a great coach. Like, you're coming off success. I'm like, oh. Connor Wegman, maybe we need to, and really, like, his time at Texas A&M was tough too. Like, you went through some coaching changes and a lot of transition. Like, I think you're seeing a guy who's finally ready to kind of come into his own. Look, Damon Williams, I think there was the whole, is he going to stay? Is he going to leave? Everybody knew he's kind of good, but the numbers to me were much better than I had initially thought. And Noah Fafita, it was like, because he had this, you know, the great year in 24 or 23. And then 24 was a little bit of a disappointment, particularly when he had Teteroa McMillan to throw to, and it didn't really come together. But that was first year with a new head coach and lost to Jed Fish. And then last year, it was like nobody was really paying attention. And then you go back and you look at Noah Fafita's numbers, and you're like, shit, he lost his best wide receiver and had his best year. Like, that is a guy who has really kind of come into his own. Jennings and Bailey are also good, guys to just say, like, I don't think people on the national stage have paid much attention to them. Like, SMU and Jennings had a playoff game. We're in the playoff 2 years ago, but, like, Jennings didn't look great in that game. So, like, he's done so much over, what, 3 years now. I was talking to Rhett Lashley about this, and he's like, dude won a high school state championship at a high school in Texas that hadn't won it in, like, 50 years. He led SMU to its first conference title in, what, 50 years, and then they move up to the ACC, and he leads SMU to a playoff in their first year in the Power 5, or Power 4. Like, the dude checks so many boxes. So, to me, that's a group of, like, guys that it's I just think if you don't know, if you haven't watched them a ton, if you don't look at the stat line, you're like, oh, yeah, I'm sure they're fine, but you don't really realize, like, these guys are among the best in the country.
You know, this number is pretty wild that you pointed out. Josh Hoover on throws of 20 yards or more last year, 15 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. and Fernando Mendoza, 9 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. And you've already heard Cignetti kind of take a little bit of a jab at TCU, right? Hey, his best friends are going to be the O-line and the running back, right? And Turbo Richard comes in. Do you expect Josh Hoover to clean it up a bit now in Mike Shanahan and Kirk Cignetti's system? And, you know, at this point, if you transfer to Indiana, you got to win the Heisman Trophy.
Right. This to me is one of the most fascinating and important questions of the college football season. Like, who is Josh Hoover going to be this year? Because the thing with Fernando Mendoza and Curtis Rourke the year before was that those guys were veteran, smart guys who were usually very, I don't want to say safe, because they weren't safe with them. Like, they were aggressive as quarterbacks, but like, they were not the most like high risk, high reward guys. And Josh Hoover is not that. He is the Texas kind of swashbuckling, gunslinging quarterback. Like, that's ingrained into his DNA. I agree. He's probably going to be surrounded by a little bit better talent at Indiana than he had at TCU. And the system at TCU probably asked him to do more. But I think that's why the deep ball throws were one of the things that I thought was so intriguing, because like, he had more big plays on deep balls than Fernando did, but Fernando had zero bad plays on the deep balls. And that's, to me, there's a risk reward calculation that at this point, I don't doubt Kurt Cignetti can do anything. To me, he's just, you know, waves his magic wand and it gets fixed. So I'm not going to write it off. I think this is a different level challenge, though, than taking Curtis Rourke coming up from the group of five or taking Fernando Mendoza and letting him fully explore his talent set. Like, this is a little bit, because it's sort of like the, can't teach an old dog new tricks thing. Like, Josh Hoover's been playing this way for a long time. So if anybody's going to change him, Kirk Cignetti will, and get the best out of him. But I don't know. I'm a little more nervous about it, I guess.
All right, before I let you run, a couple quick hitters. For those who know me, know I have a Devin Dampier fascination. When he transferred from New Mexico to Utah, I was all in on Devin Dampier. I got a little sad after after the Texas Tech game. But I am curious, because I was a sideline reporter for the Vegas Bowl. I get it. It's a bowl game. But that was a game where I'm like, there it is. That's the guy that I think he can be. And he stays at Utah. Now, Jason Beck, who he had at New Mexico, had at Utah. He's now at Michigan. Is that a concern for you? And what did you unearth looking at Dampier's numbers? Because I am not going to quit Devin Dampier. He will be my guy again this year.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I that's one where I say, like, how does fit look? But I still think, like, it's a good place for him. And yes, some change in coordinator, but I don't think that Utah's suddenly going to be something markedly different than they were last year. And he's a guy who has obviously made strides every year of his career and gotten better. He was better last year than he had been the year before in New Mexico. What I think you want to see from him is more consistency in the passing game. Because when you take away, and he's an electric athlete, but when you take that away, or when you put the game on his arm against a good team, he hasn't shown it yet. So, like, to me, that's can he take that next step?
Yeah, that's a big one. All right, last two. The quarterback that David Hale is going to say, this is my guy. This is the one, after I did all the research, people aren't talking about him, but this is the guy that I am championing in 26.
Well, Wakeman was one of the ones that really jumped out to me of, like, I don't think people fully appreciate, like, what he's been throughout his career. This is a guy who was a top five recruit, like, blue chip guy. There's no reason he can't be a great quarterback. I love Willie Fritz as head coach. Like, I think that's a very good situation for him there. I like that whole tier that we just talked about. CJ Bailey's another one we didn't get into much. And I'm worried about his receiving core, but he is such a fluid, like, for a big quarterback. And I think he's like 6'6". Like, he's so fluid in his delivery and so smart. And I think you're seeing him, he's another guy like Dampier that he's taking strides every year. I could see him having a really nice year. NC State, you got to be willing to play with fire to say you like NC State to have a good season, because they are used to doing NC State things. But there's some pieces there that are likable.
The fan base that you pissed off the most putting their quarterback in a particular tier.
Well, weirdly, Rutgers fans were very angry at me, and I'm like, you exist? How is this happening? Good luck with Dylan Lonergan. I hope it all works out for you.
David, one of my favorite reads every offseason. It's awesome. I really appreciate you jumping on.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And as promised, it is a Wednesday, even though many of you might be listening to this on another day because, you know, we're not time sensitive in the offseason. But Wednesdays with Wes is back, and we're going to go in depth on the defending national champion Indiana Hoosiers. Has it sunk in yet? I still feel weird saying that, but I guess I shouldn't. The Indiana Hoosiers, by far the best team in college football a year ago. What will they look like in 26? But Wes, you're rocking your Indiana gear, rightfully so. Has it sunk in yet? Has the champagne smell already come off your clothes?
Yeah, as we get closer to the season, Tim, and by the way, I love the way that sounds. That never gets old. The defending national champions of college football, Indiana. How about that? Wonders never cease. But
crazy.
Yeah, like it, as we get closer to the season, then it's like, oh, man, we got another season to play like that. That's how I felt, honestly, after the Rose Bowl, as I got my Rose Bowl jacket that I had to get, where it was like, is this the pinnacle? It's like, oh my God, we got another game to play. Like, we got to go play the Peach Bowl in Atlanta against Oregon, trying to avenge a loss. And then, you know, D'Angelo Pons put that to bed on the first play of the game. And then it's like, now we got a national championship. Like, it just kept building and building. And, yeah, you know, it is starting to sink in a little bit. It especially sinks in on draft day when you set a school record, 8. Now, that's big for us. That's not big for some of the other powers in college football, but 8 draft picks, 6 undrafted free agents. So, you know, Indiana, just hearing those names called over and over again, you know, makes you realize, okay, we're in taller cotton now. You know, we're a big boy player in this sport and obviously want to stay that way.
Well, I mean, you look back at last year and the win total jumped from 5.5 to 8.5, understandably so. And I think most of us said, hey, this team's not going to go anywhere, right? But none of us, maybe you did, but not many of us anticipated the run that they had, which was win the national title. I mean, week 3, week 4 of the season, Indiana 100-1 to win the title. Fernando Mendoza 66-1. People are building houses in Bloomington off of their gambling winnings, off of the Hoosiers and Fernando Mendoza. So as we look ahead, Wes, you know, year one under Cignetti, we talked about it so much. They were a covering machine, blew over their win total. You and I both had that win total over, never had an easier win total in our lives. And then even last year, you know, win total 8.5. You no longer are you, I feel like, ever going to get Cignetti's team on sale. It does feel like now here we are. You know, year one kind of flew under the radar. Year two, yeah, you're good, but ... Now, year three, Wes, under Cignetti, I do wonder at some point you're going to have to pay a Cignetti tax because of the results that they've had in 2 years in Bloomington.
Yeah, no question about it. And you're already kind of seeing it. 10.5 in terms of the win total. Like, that's just absurd. It's like, you know, Rhett Lewis, who, of course, does coverage for the NFL Network, was like, we won like that amount of games in my 4 years. at Indiana, and he was right. And just to see this now, like the fact that I knew, I think the first year of Cignetti, that we had somebody at least special, maybe not this special, but when I went to the Rose Bowl and watched them play UCLA, and that wasn't a great UCLA team, but they dominated them all over the Rose Bowl. It was kind of like, you know what? Maybe we found our Barry Alvarez. Like, we found a guy that's going to win 9, and maybe every few years he's going to win 10 games, and we're going to get to a big bowl game or maybe get into the college football playoff. You know, this, I think, has gone beyond anybody's expectations. Maybe not Kurt Cignetti's, because he's sticking, you know, he has his same process and values continuity, and he lives up to what he says. You know, he's kind of no BS. He's like, I value production over potential. You know, we're going to keep the main thing. The main thing, as he's fond of saying. And, you know, that's why he turned down a lot of this offseason stuff, because everybody wants a piece of him, right? Everybody wants him to speak, and everybody wants him to do all these events. Now, he made one exception to drive the pace car for the Indy 500 this past Sunday. And they were trying to talk to him from the booth, and he didn't even answer. He's like, I'm focused on the task at hand here. So he's going to, yeah, he didn't even answer the guys in the booth. So it's like, I'm just, you know, we're going to keep it going here. And you know, all the coordinators are back and, you know, just reload, you know, it's like at Indiana, we don't rebuild it. Like we were rebuilding for about, 40 or 50 years. Now it's reloading down there in Bloomington.
Yeah. I mean, you look at it 25-0 straight up as a favorite, 17-8 against the spread as a favorite in his 2 years in Indiana. But the big question now moving forward as we look ahead to 2026 is replacing these guys. And, you know, we had David Hale on the podcast to talk quarterbacks. And, you know, I did an exercise last offseason ranking the top 10 quarterbacks heading into the year. I didn't have Fernando Mendoza on there. I'm not going to make that mistake again. I don't know how good Josh Hoover is going to be, but you better believe he's going to be in my top 10 because of what we just saw from Mendoza. But let's talk about the players that Indiana won't have this year. Mendoza, Omar Cooper, D'Angelo Pons, Keelan Black, Elijah Surratt, Riley Nikowski, Pat Coogan, Aiden Fisher, all those guys, as you mentioned, all drafted to the NFL. I know that it was a really good haul, the best haul, at least per 247 under Cignetti, but how do they replace that production, Wes?
Yeah, and it's replacing the production, and it's also replacing the leadership, because you mentioned, with a couple exceptions, obviously Mendoza being one of them, a lot of these guys came from James Madison with Kurt Cignetti, and the fact that they knew the process and they were able to teach the other guys on the team that remained in the program or came in from other schools or guys that were just recruited out of the high schools as freshmen, they knew the process and they knew the program. So now you have a lot of those remnants now are gone, but everybody seems to be trying to duplicate it, right? Like Penn State's a big example. I think James Cignetti brought in, like, I think 13 or 14 guys from James Madison. And then you see, like, Matt Campbell bringing in, like, darn near 30 guys from Iowa State. So that's why I think a lot of people like the Nittany Lions chances, but we were down that road last year, and I certainly had egg on my face. But anyway, I think with Indiana, like, the talent, Tim, I think on this roster might be better than the talent from last year. As ridiculous as that sounds, when you have two guys go in the first round, which just doesn't happen at Indiana, like, ever. So, you know, I think the fact that the talent in terms of more players, when you win a national championship and when you win big, kids want to go win. And you're getting more talent that I think not only out of the portal, but out of the high schools that are more interested in Indiana, that are taking them seriously. Like everybody puts out the list, right? You know, sometimes it's four schools. Sometimes it's like, well, I'm down to 15 schools. Right. But certainly you see that IU logo on there. A lot more with these guys next to Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Texas, and, you know, Georgia and Alabama and all these big time programs. And it's like, we actually have chances with these guys. It wasn't like, well, we're just getting a courtesy visit now. No courtesy visits. You know, the Indiana is starting to recruit at a better level. And the talent, I just think, is certainly better. Like there are certain position groups on this team where it's like, I actually like this group better than what we had last year, which was really freaking good.
Well, there's no doubt. I do think the point that you make is a very good one, because how much did, a D'Angelo Pons coming from James Madison, or Elijah Surratt, or an Aiden Fisher, like knowing the system and all of that, I think that was maybe underrated a little bit. But to your point, I mean, look at the talent they brought in. According to 247 Sports, the eighth best portal class in football. And you know, you mentioned the Cignetti tax. I mean, this is a guy that was finding MAC players that were, you know, okay in the MAC and then thriving in the Big Ten. Like, it is clear that he knows how to evaluate talent. And you even go back to Fernando Mendoza. Good prospect, no doubt, but it wasn't the number one quarterback transfer last year. He obviously ended up becoming that. So looking at the pieces that come in, Josh Hoover from TCU, the biggest one. Nick Marsh, a huge coup to get him from Michigan State. I know the hat I'm wearing, these guys, Notre Dame, really wanted Nick Marsh, and he picked Indiana. Also, Joe Brunner, the offensive lineman from Wisconsin, edge rusher from Kansas State, Turbo Richard, the running back from Boston College. As you mentioned, they went head-to-head, and it's not like they're doing it just for charity work. Indiana's paying the money, and they're getting the big boys to come there. So what have you heard about this incoming class? How do they look in spring? And I guess it all stems back to the quarterback. What are your expectations of Josh Hoover in Cignetti's system in 2026?
Well, the knock on Josh Hoover, who, by the way, is the returning leading passer yardage-wise in all of college football, is that he did turn the ball over a little bit too much. And I think that was maybe a product of the fact that TCU was in a lot of shootouts in the Big 12. So when you're in those high-scoring games, you've got to, you got to put the ball in harm's way, and he sometimes did. I think that's going to be corrected this year with Mike Shanahan as the offensive coordinator. Tino Sinceri, by the way, now back as quarterback's coach as Chandler Whitmer goes off to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But you have a lot of continuity on that staff. In terms of the running game, I think is really going to help, and that's kind of the overlooked part, I think, of Indiana. I think the best unit probably on the offense is the offensive line. You have four starters back, and you had the aforementioned Joe Brunner from Wisconsin, who essentially is a fifth starter, even though he didn't start for the Hoosiers. He started for the Badgers last year. And Bob Bostad, who's the only guy that Cignetti kept on the staff from the previous regime, was Bob Bostad as the offensive line coach, because he did wonders up at Wisconsin, put a lot of guys in the league for many years. So they're going to be able to run, not only with Turbo Richard, but also with Kobe Martin, who you saw really play well. He got in mop-up time late. He's a young kid out of Fishers, Indiana. But, man, he could run. And, add him with Lee Beebe, who was out of UAB, got hurt early in the season, so we didn't see his best, certainly. Got a good running game. You have a really loaded receiver room with Nick Marsh and Charlie B from Nashville, Tennessee, yeah. Charlie Becker, who, by the way, did not play in the spring game. There were a few guys that were out due to injuries. So Charlie B, I think, should be good to go to start the season. Shaz Preston, Alabama transfer. Tyler Morris, who got hurt in summer camp and didn't play at all last year, he was a Michigan transfer. And then add those with Davion Chandler, LeBron Bond, two sophomores who kind of got some mop-up time action and some blowouts, so did at least get a chance to get some reps. And I really like this offense. And I think Hoover's going to be better at not turning the ball over. He's not going to quite be maybe Fernando Mendoza, because Fernando never hardly turned the ball over, never put the ball in harm's way. Like, if he was gotten in the pocket, which was very rare behind this offensive line, he kind of protected the ball and took the sack. You even saw that in the Penn State game, that miracle drive, which kind of saved that undefeated season, where he got sacked on first down with hardly any time left trailing in State College. And, that's what they got to break Josh Hoover the habit of. He can put some spin on that ball, man. He's got a strong arm. There's no question about that. Maybe even a stronger arm than Fernando, but it's just not forcing it, not doing too much. The schedule, obviously, is a nice soft starting spot for Hoover. Of course, there are three bye games: North Texas, Howard, Western Kentucky, and then the Friday night Big Ten opener against Northwestern. So he's not like thrown into the fire right away where you're playing some power opponent in the non-conference, or you're opening with Ohio State or something like that. So he has a chance, I think, to at least kind of, take some baby steps before it's going to be really go time in the meat of the schedule.
All right, let's wrap on this. You mentioned the schedule. October 17th is going to be one of the biggest games of the college football season, the rematch of the Big Ten championship game. It'll be in Bloomington. I got to imagine, Wes, that's going to be the biggest game ever inside that stadium. Maybe a long, long time ago. The anticipation is going to be huge. But right now, when you look at the schedule, based off of power ratings, that's probably the only game they're an underdog in. And if they're an underdog, it's very small. But, you play Michigan the week after Ohio State. You go to Nebraska the week before Ohio State. You go out to Washington, which is always kind of a funky trip. And that's after a USC game. So you mentioned 10.5 is the win total. That's huge. Is there anything you would look at right now? It's May 27th, subject to change. I know you'll do more of your research later on, but 10.5 is the win total. I think MGM is minus 300 to make the playoff this year, plus 250 to win the Big Ten, or we could go back-to-back national titles if you want to do that, and that's around plus 750, 8 to 1.
I do want to do that, yes.
Yes. So what are you, what's up. your... overall, May 27th, as we're recording this, Wes, what's your kind of gut feel on what this season's going to be? What's the ceiling? I mean, I think the ceiling's national title. This team is talented enough to win a title, but what's the floor? What's the kind of expectation realistically for year three for Cignetti?
I think that they're priced right in most of the markets. Like, I know you could make an argument that maybe them being six in a lot of the preseason polls is too low, but I think it's probably fair because there are some unknowns in terms of who you have to replace. It's like, you know, you haven't been here that long. So it's not like, well, if Ohio State or Notre Dame or Georgia loses a Heisman winner, that they're going to be right where they are because they're given the benefit of the doubt. Indiana maybe hasn't quite earned that yet, but I think 10.5 is fair. Like, I look at the schedule, and Ohio State will be the game October 17th. They'll be a small underdog, highly anticipated. The hotel rooms are going in the thousands already, and we're only in May. So, yeah, good luck getting tickets. You have to maybe sell just one kidney, and I don't know if it's both kidneys, but you got to at least probably give up one. But if you look at the road test outside of Rutgers at Nebraska, Anthony Calandria, is he finally the answer there at Nebraska at quarterback? They've been searching for a lot of years there. Michigan, they're in transition under Kyle Whittingham. How's Bryce Underwood going to look in a new offense? And at Washington, does Damon Williams even want to be there, man? Like, they, you know, it's not ever good when your quarterback is threatened with a lawsuit. You know, necessarily,
not
but that's the era we're in. And that's why I guess we are seeing a bill proposed in the United States Senate to kind of change some things. I don't know how successful that's going to be, but I do think Indiana is going to be very successful. They're going to be the hunted, though, too, Tim, where it's like, you know what? Now it's like Indiana's just not homecoming on the schedule. Now it's like we want to beat Indiana's ass. You know, we want to get these guys. They're not that good. They're beating their chests and they got their idiot fans like Wes Reynolds that are, you know, talking trash and like, yeah, man, we're the best. You know, we're beating our chests out and they want to shut us up. So they're going to get everybody's best shot. But the schedule, like you mentioned, Tim, I think it bears out to where Indiana should make the playoff again at -300, man. That's a little rich, but yeah, I wish it was down like about $2 because I think that they're making a return appearance and maybe Kurt Cignetti can start wearing another year for the playoff because that's what he wears, that little black pullover, 2024-2025 college football playoff. It's like, dude, you realize you won the Rose Bowl and the Peach Bowl and the national championship. Mix in another gear, but he's comfortable and I'm not going to ever question him. Like, I'm not going to be one of these fans. It's like, oh, man, I don't know. We're not recruiting the right guys. It's like, man, that guy has bought a lifetime of benefit of the doubt. So I'm not questioning that. Like, the only question is, when are we going to build the statue for the guy outside of Memorial Stadium?
Yeah, I think that's inevitability right now. They might name the damn stadium after him at this point, the way that he's been going. Wes, it's going to be a great year. Always great to get the in-depth preview on the defending national champion, and that this year is the Indiana Hoosiers. Always appreciate it, Wes. Looking forward to Wednesdays with Wes returning this fall, man.
You bet, man. Looking forward to it, Tim.
There he is, our great friend, Wes Reynolds. Thanks to David Hale, who joined us earlier in the podcast. Thanks to Wyatt Tomchek, Ryan Hunter, the producers of this podcast. I'm Tim Murray. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.